This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. How many French fries are too many? How often should you be able to count tomato paste as a vegetable? How much sugar is too much? Those are some of the questions parents and nutrition advocates have begun to ask as school lunch programs have come under the microscope. Perhaps you've heard that new federal guidelines will attempt to improve nutritional value coming out of school cafeterias. What you may not know is that some pretty innovative efforts are already underway at a number of Virginia schools. From farm to cafeteria programs, to schoolyard gardens, to outright bans on junk food, and more. A number of those behind these efforts will be with us this hour. And should you care to join in, here's your first pop quiz. How much nutrition could you squeeze into meals at a price tag of less than $2 per person? Your chance to add to the recipe for improving school food is coming up right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. Food is our focus on this edition, specifically food for children in public schools. Several people involved in efforts to improve school food have agreed to speak with us during the hour ahead. And if you'd care to add your voice to the conversation, you can reach us at 888-WMRA-TALK. That's 888-967-2825. Or you can post to us on Facebook, where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Later in the hour, we'll talk with a former organic farmer who now heads up a school nutrition program in a rural part of the Commonwealth, and a nutrition advocate who mounted a successful campaign to cut way back on the amount of sugar kids are getting in one city school system. But we begin with the dietitian who heads up food services in Harrisonburg Public Schools, plus a gardening consultant who's helped develop a schoolyard garden as a teaching tool in Charlottesville. Andrea Early and Guinevere Higgins, thank you both for making time for us.
Thanks for having us,
yeah,
Tom.
Thanks.
Andrea, your official title is Executive Director of School Nutrition for Harrisonburg City Schools.
That's right.
Which means that you head up the school lunch program, among other things, for that school district.
Right.
What is it, Andrea, that you suspect most people may not understand when it comes to the challenges of making cafeteria food in a school as nutritious as possible? Mm-hmm. Is it mostly about money?
Money is a huge piece, yes. What I think a lot of people don't understand is that, unlike other programs within a school system, school nutrition programs are self-supporting. And what that means is we're not allocated a chunk of money to run the lunch program. We are based on participation of students in our program. And so we receive a reimbursement amount for every student that participates, in addition to the amount that parents are paying for their students' meals. And so we're always making changes to meals in the context of, will students still participate in the program? And so,
will they still
buy lunch instead of pack?
Because if they buying the lunch,
that doesn't help
us. You have a funding
problem. That's right. We need to have a certain number of staff members in each cafeteria, whether 60% of the kids eat or 100% eat. And so we really need to cover our cost, our food cost, our labor cost. And so
Many people don't understand that it isn't simply the cost of the food.
That's right.
It also is the cost of the staff.
That's
right. And you have to have a certain minimum number of staff, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're even paying not just the staff salaries, but you're paying for
also benefits and retirement and those kinds of things for our staff, you know, in addition to supplies and equipment repair and replacement. And so,
so if you're serving Brussels sprouts and 50% of the kids say, no, I'm not eating there
anymore. That decreases the revenue to our program. And that keeps us from continuing to make improvements. And so as we look at our menus and we try to put healthier options on, there's a huge educational piece of letting kids understand why those foods are healthier, you know, parents encouraging them at home, having accompanying nutrition education to go along with just offering the healthy food choices.
I want to ask you more about free and reduced lunch in a little bit, but as we're going through the broad outline, what percentage of your students pay quote unquote full price?
Okay, well, 68% qualify for free and reduced meals.
So it's 32%
are full pay
in your school district?
Yeah, it's $1.50 at the elementary level, $1.70 at middle school, and $1.85 at the high school level.
And so less than $2.
Less than $2.
And that's difference based mainly on portion size?
Exactly.
You give a little bit more.
A little bit more
kids,
the older they get. Mm-hmm.
So right. we're going to get back to some of those other issues.
Okay.
But I also want to hear immediately from Guinevere Higgins, who every other time she was here was giving people advice on what to do with their garden. But you're helping to run a city schoolyard garden project at a middle school in Charlottesville that's really a teaching tool?
Absolutely. So I'm on the board of the City Schoolyard Garden, and we are an independent nonprofit organization. We operate under the fiscal sponsorship of the Local Food Hub, which is another wonderful nonprofit working in Central Virginia to encourage folks to get more local foods into their diets. We operate a 4,500 square foot organic garden at Buford Middle School, which serves all of Charlottesville's 7th and 8th grade public school students. It's about 500 students. It's a very diverse school. I want to say about just over 50% of the students there are on free and reduced lunch.
So, Guinevere, we're going to get to a different program where something else happens with getting fresh food into school lunches. But that's, we ought to underscore, really not the purpose of this garden. It isn't to grow food that goes into cafeteria meals at the school.
That's right.
It is not.
And there are a number, you know, this school gardening movement is really taking off across the country, and there's, you know, any number of different models for school gardening programs. Our garden really is an educational garden, and what we're trying to do is to build on the academic program at Buford Middle School and provide sort of an outdoor classroom.
I understand there's this tremendous side effect that Andrea was telling us, you know, if we put too much stuff in our meals that lots of kids don't like, it causes a big ripple effect in terms of problems if they stop buying the meals. Mm-hmm. You actually get kids to like carrots.
Well, we definitely see, we want to be an ally to these efforts that are happening in the cafeteria, in the school lunch line, so that if kids see beets on the school lunch menu, they're not going to go, ooh. They might say, oh, wait, I know how to grow beets. I've grown beets in my seventh grade.
And you've
life
actually
science
seen
class.
This is that kids I who never before seen, would eat vegetables all of a sudden love them.
I've seen seventh grade students with my own eyes eating beets. So if anyone tells you that middle
after
school
they
students
worked in the garden.
After, and they watch literally, right. they watch the beet go from, you know, a half inch little sprout in the ground to, you know, a big, beautiful, ripe, round beet. And then roast that with a little olive oil and salt and pepper, and boom, you have a really delicious side dish.
Well, joining us now by phone is a former organic farmer, a former director, as well as founder of a so-called farm-to-table program for the school district in which she lives, and someone who is now in charge of all food programs in that very same district. Rappahannock County's Director of School Nutrition, Trista Grigsby. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, Trista, I know it's no longer your primary focus since you took your new job with the school system just a few months ago, but if you could tell us just what was that farm-to-table program that you created in Rappahannock?
Sure. Farm-to-table started in 2004, 8 years ago, as a program to teach sustainable agriculture and nutrition education through hands-on education. And very similar to Guinevere, we are trying to come at this with a multidisciplinary learning strategy. So, for instance, we're teaching math skills using our rain barrels and teaching science and history as well. But our primary focus was to teach students about getting their hands dirty, the joys of that, and then eating the food that they grow. And while a pretty good portion of that food comes into the school cafeterias by way of the culinary arts classroom. A lot of it also goes as a donation to the local food pantries so that students can also get the value of community service.
Did some of the food from this program go into school lunches, or is this once again an educational thing?
Both. We do. So in farm-to-table donations for 2011, the fall, from September to December, 36.25 pounds has gone to the cafeteria. However, you know, that's out of 158 pounds of produce. So 36 pounds doesn't sound like a lot. And if you multiply that by $4 a pound or so, it only comes out to be about $145 worth of food. But the value comes from the point of sale materials that we put up and from the peer pressure of the students who grew it saying, hey, I grew that salad. You should try it. And that helps with the educational component as well as increasing nutrition in the school cafeterias. So we see a real synergy between what is in the cafeteria and what's coming from the farm-to-table students.
So, Trista, for many years, you were an advocate for improving nutrition in school food. Now that you are in charge of a school food program in Rappahannock, are you seeing things from a different perspective? are you empathizing from some of what we heard from Andrea about the difficulties in doing it right?
Oh, gosh. I can't even tell you. When I started this job in July, I was just swimming with the regulations and the guidelines and the ledgers, and I'm basically running a $500,000 budget with a 10-employee business that is freestanding, as Andrea said, from the regular school operating budget. As an advocate for farm-to-table, I was like, you know, it's easy. You just put up this marketing blitzkrieg, and kids are going to just love it, and you just do it. And now that I'm in the driver's seat, I see why exactly it's so hard, because there are so many regulations for what you can and cannot serve.
Well, Trista is only going to be with us for a couple of more minutes from the Rappahannock School District. So if you want to talk to her, you got to call right away at 888-WMRA-TALK, 1-888-967-2825. Andrea Early from the Harrisonburg School District and Guinevere Higgins from the Charlottesville City Schoolyard Garden Project are going to be here a little bit longer, but you can call right now for them too, or post to us on Facebook where we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. This Facebook post coming in from Sharon, I don't know if there's a question implied in here or not, but Sharon says that she was a teacher for many years and that she has watched school food try to go back to the home-cooked and fresh-baked foods of the 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. Does that strike you, Andrea, as accurate?
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. What we saw is sort of a shift to a more heat-and-serve approach over the last, you know, I'd say 15, 20 years, mostly due to food cost and, you know, it being sometimes more reasonable to purchase food that had already been sort of pre-made and pre-portioned and it only required heating. But what we've seen is many school divisions, including ours, tried to shift that back, to move towards a more scratch-cooked approach, to be able to minimize the amount of ingredients in our foods, to lower the sodium content, and, you know, just to make our foods healthier overall. So, yeah, I would say that that is accurate.
Trista?
I would absolutely agree. You know, the heat and serve has its value, and one of the values is that it reduces labor cost. Mm-hmm. And when you're looking at an operating budget and you see my school district has run in an annual deficit of anywhere from $24,000 to $44,000 annually in their school nutrition program. So they're trying to cut corners on labor costs every year. So I walk in and heat and serve food is obviously going to be any nutrition director's choice for reducing those labor costs to increase nutrition.
But when you're talking
about
heat and serve, you're talking about processed foods.
Right. When you something that you open the bag and you put on a tray and you put in your oven and you warm up.
And there's also a cost savings, not just in labor, but probably in the cost of the food itself, isn't there?
Correct.
And I'm sorry to cut you off, but we've only got about a minute more of you here with us. So I want to ask, in this new position that you're in, what are you most hoping to accomplish? What would your ideal school food situation look like?
I would be delighted if I could get to the 10% local food procured by Andrea in Harrisonburg. I would be tickled to death if we could get to that point and have complete buy-in, know that that food was not being discarded off of students' trays. And just to have real enthusiasm about real food is my ultimate goal.
Rappahannock County's new director of school nutrition, Trista Grigsby, thanks so much for making time for us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We're going to continue here on Virginia Insight, talking in a few moments with somebody who's battling against sugar in a city school district. But you're invited to join the conversation, too. We'll be back in a minute. School food is our focus on this edition of Virginia Insight. Harrisonburg City Schools Executive Director of School Nutrition, Andrea Early, is one of our guests. The co-founder of the Charlottesville-based consulting firm, Blue Ridge Backyard Harvest, Guinevere Higgins, is another of our guests, and she's here specifically because of her efforts with something in Charlottesville called the City Schoolyard Garden Project. If you have some suggestions about what you'd like to see done with school food, some questions about why it's done the way it is, 888-WMRA-TALK is our phone number, 888-967-2825. Andrea, one of the things that you helped us understand early on is that money plays a big part in what can or cannot be done.
Right.
And in terms of experimentation, not only because you only have so much money to buy food, and fresh food almost always costs more than processed food.
It does.
But also, if you start experimenting with things that kids go, yuck, and a large proportion of the student population won't purchase it, then you lose money that you depend on in order to continue the program.
That's right.
One thing that we didn't clarify is just how much money you have to buy food.
In Harrisonburg, our calculations, it comes out to about $1.27 per lunch that we have to spend on the food that goes into that lunch. So we talked about that we, you know, pay for the other things, the labor and equipment and supplies. So that isn't included in that $1.27. That $1.27 is devoted to food. And again, that it certainly doesn't sound like a lot, but that's higher than many school divisions have. And we attribute that to a very high rate of participation among our students. And actually, the fact that we have a higher percentage of students who qualify for free and reduced meals, it's a little bit higher level of reimbursement that comes into the program. It allows us to have a little bit higher budget for food, but still $1.27 is not a lot to work with. And so we have to be very creative with that amount.
So these new federal regulations that are going into effect, that among other things, they reduce the amount of salt, the amount of sugar, increase whole grains, I guess.
They do.
What are some of the other highlights of those new federal regulations?
There are larger serving sizes for fruits and vegetables. Students will now be required to select at least a half a cup of fruit or vegetable with their meal, where they currently are not required to. We have to offer two different servings per day, but they don't have to take one if they take the other three meal components. And so this will actually require students to have a fruit or vegetable on their plate, regardless of if they're going to eat it or not. Our hope is that they will take it and then consume it and that it won't end up in the trash. That's a change. There are also specific types of vegetables that are going to need to be offered. So dark green, dark orange or red, legumes, so dried beans and peas. There's a minimum per week that we'll need to serve.
So looking at what some of these new federal regulations say has to go into school meals, and your concerns about whether or not there's going to be a yuck factor for what gets on a kid's tray and whether or not they'll keep purchasing school lunch, and your other monetary concerns, where do the new federal regulations put you in terms of money concerns?
Yeah, you know, I think that we will be okay in Harrisonburg. We've made many of these changes ahead of the curve. So we're already offering dark green, dark orange vegetables weekly in the amounts that are going to be required. Legumes, we're pretty close. I haven't checked it week by week like I'll need to. We're already doing lots of whole grains. So I think we've absorbed much of this cost already. And again, we've been able to because we do operate with a little bit of a higher food cost than some divisions. Now, the having every student select half a cup of fruit or vegetable, where now we know that some students do not. And while that's unfortunate, it does keep food costs down to some degree. So now that every student will have one on their plate, that is the reality is it's going to increase our food cost. And again, I'm okay with that. I would love to have some additional funding to support that. And it sounds like we will receive about 6 additional cents in federal reimbursement.
That's one of the other things that you worry about is that if the price goes too high for the students whose parents probably are giving them the money to go to school and buy a lunch,
then the parents are going to say, I'm not going to pay $3 for a meal. We'll just put together a peanut butter jelly sandwich.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a tipping point where parents will say, you know, I think I can do better. I can pack cheaper than what the school meal cost, you know, and that's always been our goal, to try to keep that price for paid students as reasonable as we can to encourage participation among that group of students. So,
and if I could just jump in, I think what's really amazed me about Harrisonburg's program is that, maybe you have a little more money to work with per student, but you've been able, as Trista mentioned earlier, to incorporate local food into that menu. And I think that's really something we're striving for in Charlottesville. But I think that's something that's really exciting.
Yeah,
well,
it
joining
is.
Us now is a woman who, in her professional life, runs a nutrition and wellness counseling service. But as a volunteer, she serves as chair of the Health Advisory Board for the Charlottesville City School District, Ivana Cadilla. Good to have you back on the Insight Airwaves.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Well, Ivana, tell us about this battle that you waged against sugar in Charlottesville City Schools.
Well, you know, it started last year with the School Health Advisory Board. We took a look kind of at what's going on with food in general for children in America, and discovered that adolescents were eating a quarter of their calories in literally added sugar. And I'm not talking about bananas or apples, added sugars. Decided to focus on that in terms of the nutrition piece of our wellness policy that we were working on to revamp. As part of that, I sort of independently started a petition to sort of gauge interest in the community about just focusing on sugar.
And you got a lot of interest.
We did. We had over 1,000 people sign the petition.
Said that in essence, you got to cut back on sugar in our schools.
In essence, it said, that was important. Let's reduce it.
So what's going on to reduce it now?
So, well, I'm happy to say that as part of that whole effort with the petition, we've passed now, the school board passed December 1st, a wellness, very comprehensive wellness policy that doesn't deal just with food or nutrition or physical activity, which many wellness policies do, but very broadly covers a whole range of wellness areas, mental health and others. And specifically to the sugar, what we've managed to pass through is a regulation that says we will no longer be rewarding children with food, we've provided.
Tell me about what you're talking about when you say rewarding children with food or with sugar.
Well, I mean, you know, all of us, I'm a parent, all of us fall into this trap of, if I could just, you know, get my kid to do something, here's a Skittle or a Jolly Rancher. And teachers aren't immune to this. I mean, they have a lot of pressures in teaching in public schools, teaching children of very, very diverse backgrounds and levels, educational levels. And so they often resort to, okay, if we can behave through the rest of this day, you'll get a Jolly Rancher at the end of the day. Or if we've done well for the whole week, we'll have a cookie party. I'll bake some cookies for you guys.
And that's now illegal in Charlottesville City Schools. You cannot hand out chocolate chip cookies for doing well on a test.
It shouldn't be done. Obviously, any policy is a process of education, and no one's going to get thrown in jail if that happens. but the point really is to raise awareness among adults about what we're doing. And how we can help kids be more open to trying a beet from the schoolyard garden and literally enjoying it.
Well,
Guinevere
Higgins,
tasting those sugars, you know.
With the City Schoolyard Garden Project, it's Buford Middle School.
Middle School in Charlottesville.
I understand as much as all of us can imagine children being tempted by M&Ms or some other sugary sweet. That there actually is a story about children and frozen cabbage?
Yes, we
an
have
an incident that you experienced.
Yes, well, we have a we have this wealth of anecdotes. You know, and as we were discussing earlier, you know, you just can't assume that kids aren't going to like something or aren't going to want to try something, particularly if they had a hand in producing it. So there's this wonderful anecdote about two boys in a seventh grade life science lab who, you know, on a freezing cold day as they're collecting the data on their winter greens lab, decided that they wanted to pluck up the row cover under which some Napa cabbage was growing and eat frozen leaves of Napa cabbage, not because their teacher said, we really ought to be trying the frozen Napa cabbage, but because they just wanted to, because they're curious. Or maybe they grew that Napa cabbage in the after-school garden club and they wanted to see what it tasted like on a freezing cold morning in November. So, you know, you really just can't expect that kids don't want to try this food and maybe don't want to eat it in the school lunch line.
So, Andrea Early from the Harrisonburg City Schools District, you are a dietitian.
I am.
Do you sometimes feel like you need to be more of a psychologist, a child psychologist, to figure out how to persuade kids to eat what is good for them to eat?
That would help. That would definitely help. That would help in my own home, I think, some days. But yeah, you know, again, I think these kind of projects are so important. You know, we need a consistent message across the board. And so, you know, like Ivana with the classroom situation, we want to be, it's the same message. We can do as much as we can do in the cafeteria through our signage, through encouraging words of our staff for kids to try things. We can, you know, have some samples out for students of something that's new. We can try to offer a new fruit or vegetable with a main entree that we know that they really like and that that is a drawing card to bring them into the lunch line that day. But we need to have things like the school gardens and other projects, you know, within the classroom where kids learn about where their food comes from, why healthy eating is important. Teachers modeling that behavior is so, so important. We run the Fresh Fruit and Vegetable the USDA Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Program at one of our elementary
schools.
So
have teachers in the hallways eating carrots? Does that help?
Yes. I mean, just right. Like they're just set up with their fruits and vegetables. Now, as part of that grant program, kids receive fresh fruits and vegetables as a snack at a time other than meal service. Because we know when they're coming through the lunch line, it's a social time. They're probably going to eat their favorite thing on their tray first, which isn't always the fruit or vegetable, unfortunately. And so this program allows them to try new fruits and vegetables in the afternoon in their classroom with their teacher modeling that behavior. She's trying it. She's talking about it. She's talking about, you know, how this peach grows and why fruits and vegetables are good for you. And then everybody tries the juicy fresh peach at the beginning of the year that's procured locally in most cases. So I think we can't underestimate, again, what kids are willing to try. But again, we need to give them the opportunities to do that. So this is a great example.
To you who are listening, I'm hoping there's a couple of areas that you may be able to help here. One is I'm wondering what it is you recall from the days long ago or not so long ago when you were in school and going through the lunch line. What do you remember about the food? What do you remember about the experience? How healthy do you think it was back then? And if you have children or grandchildren, what do you know about what your kids are getting in school food today? What concerns you? 888-WMRA Talk is our phone number, 888-967-2825. And if you have a story or a piece of advice on how to get kids more interested in things that are good for them when it comes to what they ingest and maybe less interested in the sugary things that are not good for them, maybe you have a success story you're willing to share with us. We'd love to hear from you, too, at 888-967-2825 or on our Facebook page where we are listed as Virginia Insight. We have this on our Facebook page from an organization that is called the Shenandoah Forum. And actually, they put up a couple of posts that went on at length about what that forum is doing and trying to do. So if anybody wants to read more about them, you're welcome to on Facebook. But here's their basic question, asking if you would discuss techniques and strategies for getting more local and fresh foods into school cafeterias and how to overcome some of the obstacles such as cost, mm-hmm. availability, storage, mm-hmm. and distribution. And they're also asking, is there a difference in a county school versus a city school?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Wow, that could be a mouthful. let's see. So in Harrisonburg, we are on average serving about 10% of our procuring about 10% of our foods locally. It's lower this time of year. Obviously, there's not as much growing. So the steps that we took were two very baby steps. We are 5 years into this program, and again, we're at 10%. So that's another 90% of food that is not grown or produced around here. So I just started by making contact with area farmers. The very first product that we incorporated was a hothouse grown lettuce. That was something that I was able to negotiate a price that was pretty comparable to what I could get from a distributor for a pre-chopped romaine. We had already sort of made the jump from an iceberg lettuce to a romaine lettuce, so we sort of increased the nutritional value there, and then we sourced something that we knew kids already would eat. Our kids are pretty good salad eaters. We do salad bars at our secondary schools. We do entree salads every day at elementary. And so it was a product that we knew kids were already consuming. And so I think that's important, looking at your current menu and seeing, okay, what am I using that maybe could be sourced locally?
So in terms of the question about obstacles, yeah. were there challenges that had to be overcome?
Sure. Distribution's a real big one. When you have schools, it's not like the foods are being delivered to one restaurant, one place. For us, it's seven different kitchens, eight schools, and so we are within the city limits. So some farmers are willing to make that round and deliver to eight different schools. Most are not going to be able to do that. It's just not cost effective. And so there's different ways you can handle that. Most schools use a produce distributor to get their main produce bid through. And so oftentimes those distributors are willing to work with those local growers to pick up their product and then distribute it to schools. That sometimes can increase the cost a little bit, but oftentimes it's not as much as you would think of an increase. So that's one way that can be handled. But distribution's an issue. In terms of cost, oftentimes schools are able to use product that maybe wouldn't be able to be marketed at a farmer's market, or where it's maybe a smaller size apple, from an orchard that's perfect for schools, but maybe not perfect for the system at large. So it's not always more costly. Sometimes it can be. What we've found is that some of the products we buy cost a little bit more, but we can offset that sometimes in other areas through cooperative buying. We're part of a food buying co-op. So for most of our food and supplies, we can negotiate very good pricing because of the sheer volume when we buy through this co-op. And so that then allows us to maybe put a little bit more money into this local food that we're buying.
Cecilia is calling us from Richmond. Cecilia, if you have a question or comment for Guinevere Higgins from the City Schoolyard Garden Project in Charlottesville, Andrea Early from the Harrisonburg School Food Program, or for Ivana Kadia, who heads up the Charlottesville City Schools Health Advisory Board. Your choice. You're on the air. Ask away.
Hi. Yes, I actually just had a brief success story that I wanted to share with y'all, that my mom is the director of food services at a school in Richmond, and she's been working for years to reform the way the kids eat and the nutrition, and she's finally been able to do so by instituting meatless Mondays. Mm. They've eliminated dessert except for once a week. They have French fries once a month, if that. She also buys as much local produce as she can, local kale, local tofu.
Cecilia, my apologies for interrupting, but we're going to hit the break here in a moment. It sounds like one of the things that's going on here is making things more of an event and getting kids excited about it that way?
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that story. We are going to continue here on Virginia Insight in just a moment. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Still here in the studio with me, dietitian Andrea Early, who heads up all school food programs for Harrisonburg City Schools, and organic gardening consultant Guinevere Higgins, who is co-chair of the City Schoolyard Garden Project. During the break, we said goodbye to Ivana Kadia from the Charlottesville City Schools Health Advisory Board in order to make room for our next telephone participant. Now there's a group in Central Virginia that calls itself the Local Food Hub and runs a number of efforts to get food from local farms onto people's plates. And one of this group's best-known programs involves the food that shows up on the plates of school children. And so we've asked the Hub's Director of Outreach, Emily Manley, to tell us more about that. Ms. Manley, welcome to Virginia Insight.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Emily, you've been working with schools in Charlottesville as well as Albemarle, Greene, and Nelson counties, among other places. What kind of impact do you feel that you've been having?
Well, we've been really excited to work with these schools. We've been around since 2009, and our work with the schools has really grown over the past couple of years. We provide food for their lunch programs. We work really closely with the nutrition directors at all of those schools, so we are able to get local food onto the lunch trays for those kids. And we also work with the Fresh Fruits and Vegetables program that Andrea was mentioning earlier in Charlottesville.
So every time I turn to you, Guinevere, and you look like you have something to say, then you give me the sign that says, no, I changed my mind. I really don't have something
to say. It's rare when I don't have something to say, I will admit. I would, since I have Emily on the line, I just want to say how grateful we are that we work with the Local Food Hub and how much they've done to ensure that school kids are getting access to fresh local foods.
Right. And it's my understanding that your hub is centered in Charlottesville, Emily, but that you connect with farms in about a 100-mile radius of that central point?
That's correct. We work with about 70 small family farms in Central Virginia, and yeah. One of the programs that we work with them on is our aggregation and distribution services that operate out of a warehouse in Ivy, Virginia. And these services enable these local farms and food producers in our region to access large, consistent wholesale markets, such as public schools, hospitals, universities, and, of course, grocery stores and restaurants as well. So we're kind of that one number to call for local food. And we try to make it as easy as possible for cafeteria managers and nutrition directors to access a really wide variety of local foods through a familiar process. So it's kind of the same process that they use in ordering from other distributors, only we deal only in local food.
And so from your perspective, what is the biggest challenge in getting more produce and local grown food into school cafeterias? Is it price? Is it cost?
But not always. I have found that we're really competitive with other distributors of local of regular food, and sometimes it's just about being creative. It's about education. It's learning about seasonality. It's learning about what's available and when. And you know, we're really excited to work with the nutrition directors to be kind of creative in finding what fits into their menus and their budget constraints and their staffing concerns to find kind of the perfect item when we can. So, you know, pricing is always going to be an issue with school food, but it doesn't seem to really lock us out of a lot of things. Sometimes it's education. Sometimes it's just, you know, being aware that local food is there and, you know, thinking about it when you're placing your order.
Kelly, there we are. Kelly in Harrisonburg, thank you for calling in on Virginia Insight. Your question or comment for Andrea Early, Guinevere Higgins, and or Emily Manley, please.
Wonderful. I wanted to actually give a comment and a question. I work in Harrisonburg City Schools, and I believe it was a 21st Century Grant that we had received. Andrea, am I right with that? With the fruits and vegetables that were provided over the past couple of years?
Yeah, it's actually USDA Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Program.
It's
federal funds. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I wanted to say how wonderful that was. It was an education for, I would say, both the teachers and the students, mm-hmm. Receiving that fresh fruit and vegetable each week. And it was interesting trying to get the children interested in it. Mm-hmm. You know, if it wasn't something they wanted to eat then, I would always try to save it. And then we would cook within the class with that ingredient, and they ended up enjoying it. So then when mm-hmm. it was served again, they were more likely to try it.
Right.
Kelly, you teach in Harrisonburg schools?
I'm sorry?
Do you teach in Harrisonburg schools?
Yes, sir.
And, and what grade do you teach?
Right now I'm in preschool, but I've taught first through third grade.
So we're talking about pretty young kids who have a tendency to have a reputation for being finicky.
Very much so. But I feel like in the past, if we get excited about it, they also, you know, take over that excitement for whatever it is, and they run with it. So that, I think, has been wonderful. My question that I have as a, you know, just as a concern is I've noticed that sometimes in the mornings, you know, some of our breakfast materials are served in plastic and they've been heated within that plastic. And just, you know, knowing what I know about plastics in general, I was wondering, you know, is that something that's being microwaved or how is it that it's being heated?
It's not. It's actually cooked in the oven. And yeah, that's on my radar screen. You know, I think in school food, you're always trying to look at your menus and take one thing at a time. And yeah, that's that's something that I think we're trying to move away from using a lot of those types of products. We're assured from the manufacturer that it's safe to heat it at that temperature, so it's not microwaved. But again, breakfast is probably a final frontier. Maybe we've made changes to reduce the sugar in our cereals and try to do a little bit more scratch cooking at breakfast. But again, I think our emphasis has been more on lunch at this point and trying to make some more improvements in breakfast along the way as well.
Kelly, thank you so much for your call.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you.
Phone number is 888-WMRA-TALK, 888-967-2825. If you have a question or suggestion about school food, next to Culpepper, Catherine, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Again, it's a comment. You had the comment earlier about how an impact teaching children when they're very young about food has. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to go to a very small elementary and junior high school. And this was many years ago, say, let's say the 70s, but let's not say, you know, how old I am now. And, you know, when I talked to my classmates from that time, we remember the food. We had an old-fashioned kind of country cook who cooked the vegetables, and it certainly is not what we would probably look at it as a goal for healthy today, but the idea of care and you know, treats and healthy food and all of that kind of being a lifetime memory and guideline is something that really does start very early. And as I say now, all these many years ago without numbers, it's something that my classmates and I still remember when we talk to each other.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think we've seen that in our program with the City Schoolyard Garden, because we have an after-school gardening club. We have an after-school cooking club. And kids really, I think they really, particularly in the age that we work with, seventh and eighth graders, they want to learn these skills because they're, you know, they're becoming independent people, and they want to learn how to cook for themselves. We had a great story of a cooking class that learned how to can homemade applesauce. Mm-hmm. Well, there was a student in that class who gave as gifts as Christmas gifts to his teachers jars of homemade applesauce. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that's such a huge skill. That student is going to take that with him for the rest of his life. And just like this caller just mentioned, you know, this is really important foundational stuff that people remember.
It is.
Catherine, thank you so much for sharing that experience with us.
Yeah, thank you.
888-967-2825 is our phone number. We got a couple phone lines open now. If you have a question or comment about school food, we're hoping that Dennis does. Dennis, you're in Shenandoah County, I understand.
Yes, thank you, Tom. I have an observation and a question. The observation is that now that I've called in, there's only been two males involved in this program. So there's maybe another need to get more males involved. But the question is, other than the students taking the message home, how do you get parents more to be advocates of more locally sourced food, more nutritious food? Do you go through PTOs or what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, we do a variety of approaches. We do a newsletter, a quarterly newsletter out to our parents in both English and Spanish, and we almost always include something about farm to school and the value of local foods on that. We've tried to do some projects with the local farmers market and, you know, a little bit of things. We probably should do a little bit more with them. And, you know, there's various things. I think for us, it's, you know, our menu is the thing that most parents are going to look at. And so, again, we try to promote the fact that we purchase local foods on that menu and highlight what those foods are. And maybe that helps parents to understand what might be in season at that point in the beginning of the year. If we say, you know, on our menu, we have cucumbers and tomatoes and peppers. These are sourced locally. Maybe that would emphasize with a parent that, oh, I could buy those from my local farmer's market or the local roadside stand or whatever it might be. So certainly I think we could expand our efforts in that area.
Dennis, just let me point out that the last time we did a whole show on food, all of the guests were male. It wasn't purposeful either time. It's just the way that it worked out. But
Great, thank you.
No, Dennis, before you go away, actually, you ask a point about advocating for locally sourced food that reminds me that we haven't heard from Emily Manley in a while, and that's probably right up her alley. Emily, what do you find in terms of getting parents more interested in advocacy for the kinds of things that your group, the Local Food Hub, does?
Right. Well, we work, you know, to educate and get people involved in the local food movement in a lot of different ways. We have an educational farm here in Scottsville that we bring school groups out to. People can come volunteer. We do programs in the city as well. And in the schools in particular, you know, during Farm to School Week, we often go and visit lunch programs, and we'll do apple tastings and different activities with the kids. And those sometimes go home with the kids, you know, and they talk about them at the dinner table or whatnot. But I think, you know, the points that Andrea was making are really key, making sure those items are highlighted on the menus and different things. I often hear from parents, you know, I went to the school today because you said it was farm to school, and I couldn't find any of the local foods on the menu, and I didn't know what was what. So I think labeling is really key. And we also try to provide little, what we call shelf talkers, which are little laminated cards that have a picture of the farmer and a little bit about his or her story and what kind of food item is there. So it's kind of hitting them from all different angles, but just trying to be really clear and direct about what you're doing, because I think people want to know about it. So
I always say we need a marketing department.
Yeah,
we really do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, budget for that.
Right, right.
One more from Facebook. This is Mary Elizabeth, who says, I had lunch today at Nelson County High School to follow the recommendation of Virginia School Board Association President's Food for Thought initiative. I don't know what Mary Elizabeth is talking about, but I was guessing, Andrea, that you might.
Yes. This year, the main focus of the VSBA, if I have that acronym correct, is a focus on school nutrition. And so I believe that the president has encouraged board members to go out and eat in their schools and report back. And we were encouraged to post something on their website. It's the Food for Thought website that just kind of highlights our program. And so, yeah, that's just a big initiative of the School Board Association this year.
And Dennis, thank you once again for your call and for helping me out and not being the only male in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go away, Guinevere Higgins, what's next for the City Schoolyard Garden Project?
That is a great question. Well, we have this fantastic sort of flagship pilot program at Buford. We broke ground in the spring of 2010. The program has been so successful, largely because it's something that the teachers and the school administrators have been so supportive of, and we couldn't do it without them. Our program really has been as successful as it is because teachers said, yes, this is something I want to do in my classroom. And so we're excited to be able to start offering garden programs to other city schools. There's been a tremendous interest at the elementary school level, and so we're really excited to sort of begin the conversation and develop the strategy where we can build on the success that we've encountered at Buford and bring it to some other kids, some younger kids, develop new programs, develop new curricular resources. We're excited because we've had a lot of success in our seventh grade life science curriculum, but we're really excited this spring we're going to be expanding to the physical education curriculum, which is really exciting and really showcasing to kids that not not only is gardening something that's a wonderful outdoor physical activity that should be is a lifelong way to stay fit, but it's also a great way, of course, to get exposed to mm-hmm. fresh fruits and vegetables and hopefully, ally our efforts with what happens in the cafeteria mm-hmm. so kids are a little more in tune with healthy eating. And then we'll be expanding to the math curriculum. So our program at Buford really just continues to grow. Teachers are constantly expressing more interest. We have a wonderful full-time garden educator there, and it's really she has helped build our program as far as engaging teachers and ensuring that she can help deliver on some of the curriculum that they've already developed to meet the Virginia Standards of Learning. But we can really apply that in a garden setting, which is such a wonderful classroom.
Emily Manley, with the local food hub, the school program that you do is although well known, is only one of many, many programs that you do. And in the less than 30 seconds that we have left, is there anything else that you'd most like people to know about your organization?
Sure. Well, I just think it's really exciting to see the school food conversation take off. And on a larger scale, it's really exciting to see our local farmers excited and getting involved in this as well. Our program exists to serve these farmers, and we're really excited about helping them access these markets that were sort of previously inaccessible to them. So helping to get their local food into all of these places, it's putting more money into our local economy.
And I'm sorry to cut you off, but we are out of time. I am, in a moment, though, going to mention how people can get more information about you and all the other organizations that we've touched on today. Our guests have been Andrea Early, Executive Director of School Nutrition for Harrisonburg City Schools, Guinevere Higgins, co-chair of Charlottesville's City Schoolyard Garden Project, as well as co-founder of the consulting firm Blue Ridge Backyard Harvest, and by phone from the Central Virginia Group, the local food hub, Emily Manley. Thank you all for making time for us.
Thank you.
Now, you can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org and then clicking on Virginia Insight. And when you go to that page, you will find links to more information about all of our guests and the work they are doing. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more insight.